Welcome back to His Time on Worldwide KFUO. I'm your host, Pastor Jonathan Fisk, and in studio with me, Anna Marie Wallace of Lutheran Senior Services, our Thursday conversations, and a special guest, Brian Reinhold, in-house counsel for Lutheran Senior Services, the entire organization, right?
And, correct.
You can always check out Lutheran Senior Services at lssliving.org/blog. Lots of good information showing up there, including, I'm assuming, after today, some information about how to prepare yourself legally for the end of life, aging, getting ready to join the community at Lutheran Senior Services.
Well, I brought Brian in today because you know I love to bring in guests from Lutheran Senior Services because they've got great information that they can share. But Brian especially, this information is really for anyone. So a lot of the times we get questions not only from residents within our community, but also from outside, people in our community at large who just don't really know all the things that they need to have prepared or what they should have on hand. And a lot of these documents are really important. And so we've got great people like Brian at Lutheran Senior Services who are really good at what they do. And so Brian actually has compiled a list of some of the documents that you might want to have on hand. Double check that you do have them already, or if you realize that you don't, now is a great time to go out and seek some more information on that. So Brian, I think he's got like 5 or 6 things, so have a pencil ready to write these down. But like Jonathan said, we actually have compiled this list on our blog, lssliving.org/blog, and you can go there. And there's actually a download button, so you can get this as a PDF, print it off, and that way you have it on hand. As you kind of, it's almost like a checklist that you can go down and make sure that you have all these documents, because they do become very important when it comes to any sort of emergency situation.
Right. They're not necessarily things you need for retirement. They may be things you need when you're in your 30s, just because something comes up.
Correct. So, Brian, I'm going to let him kind of explain a little bit, and we'll get going. But yes, grab a pencil or go to your computer, because this is going to be a list that you're going to want to keep track of. So good morning, Brian.
Good morning. Thank you. Basically, there's 5 documents you want to have, 4 of them which you would want to prepare for anyone from 30 on to have. And I'll go over the 4 that you should, all of us should have, and then the 5th that you need more or less when you've entered a healthcare situation. First one would be a durable power of attorney. This is a document that allows another person, your designee, to make financial decisions for you. Depending on how they're written, they can be effective as soon as you've written them. Sometimes they become effective once you've been declared incompetent by a physician. Another document you need is your advance directive. This is a document that describes the medical care that you may want or don't want when you're unable to express those wishes yourself, such as if you go in for surgery. This document can also be obtained on our website.
So, quick question, Brian. So, you've got the kind of the power of attorney, but then you also have the advance directive. Can you explain? So, if you have like maybe you've got your daughter is your power of attorney, can she override your advance directive?
The power of attorney I originally referenced is more dealing with financial issues. So payment of bills, dealing with your property. The other document you're referring to, which I was going to get to next, was the healthcare power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Healthcare power of attorney gives a designee the ability to make medical decisions that you haven't made. So that would be something that the advance directive didn't direct or didn't provide guidance for, because you can't foresee every foreseeable event in the advance directive. The healthcare power of attorney lets that designee make those decisions for you. Generally, the healthcare power of attorney cannot override the advance directive.
Oh, that's really good to know. I did not know that. So does most of the time, do you find that there's the same person does both the power of attorney and the healthcare power of attorney? Do you think it's better to have 2 people do it, or is it better when the same person does it?
It's generally better when you have the same person. Oftentimes, you run into some complications when you have one person directing the money and another person directing the healthcare decisions. Because as we know, when you go to the hospital, there are medical decisions to be made, but there are also financial decisions to be made. And those 2 people don't always agree on what's going on. So it can create some very complicated situations, putting your healthcare provider in the middle when they're having to deal with conflicting information coming in.
Now, someone may be out there thinking, though, well, okay, so I'm going to put my daughter or my spouse or my son into one of these situations. Well, why do I need to go ahead and do this? Isn't that just what's going to happen anyway? Like, if I'm sick, won't the doctors just let my son tell them what should happen? Will someone else end up taking charge of the decisions at that point?
That's a great question. And it's a common misconception that a spouse or a child would automatically be able to make those decisions for you. In very rare circumstances, usually emergency situations, will a healthcare provider look to someone who doesn't have the legal authority to make the decision mm-hmm. for you? Absent one of these documents going in, no, your spouse, child, loved one does not have the legal authority to do that. And if you find yourself in a situation unable to make these decisions, you don't have a power of attorney, you're then having to look at what's called a guardianship proceeding. And that is when you go to the court yep. to have them designate you as the guardian. And that is not a quick process.
And it's expensive as well, right?
Correct. You are generally going to need to be looking at a couple $1,000s to hire an attorney and weeks, if not maybe a few months before that process is complete. So your loved one then is left in a limbo land of not having anyone able to make day-to-day decisions for them.
You did mention that normally in an emergency situation, that wouldn't be the case. But the idea of the advance directive is to prevent any of the emergency situations from becoming a problem that gets stalled out by a court proceeding, right? That you need something done, it can just go ahead and get done.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's exactly how it is. The advance directive there is to provide guidance on the major things you may encounter, such as if you want blood products, if you want life-saving measures, if you want to be a do not resuscitate. Those are the things the advance directive are going to address so that your loved ones aren't having to make those decisions
for you. Can you go ahead and just talk about the DNR as well? Because that's something that I think only in the last maybe 10 years has it really gotten a lot of play. We have one. We went ahead and had that done as a family because we just kind of realized, oh, this is an option. Like, I don't have to be resuscitated without life, if I can call it that, like that you can, if you're in a situation when you're past a point where your body is really doing well, they don't have to keep your body functioning as long as possible. You can just let the heart attack take you, right?
Correct. Advanced directive includes what's called the DNR. It's a do not resuscitate order. Now, that's not an all or nothing thing. You can choose what life preserving measures you want. A true classic DNR would be, say you have a heart attack, they just let you expire and let you go. Other in-between things would be, I would like just CPR, but no external defibrillator device. Or I may want to be put on life support services for a certain period of time until one or two physicians determines I may not come through this. And then right. to withdraw those services and let you expire naturally.
And like you said before, you can set those up so that they have a post date of sorts, that they don't really go into practice in your 30s, right? I'm in my 30s. We have a DNR, but it will only kick in later, past a certain age.
You can write them that way as well. Yeah. Correct.
You had two other documents?
Correct. The last document I would recommend you have prepared before anything happens would be your will or your trust. These are more estate planning documents dealing with how you would like the disposition of your remains, the disposition of your property. This helps alleviate the need for your family to figure out how you want to dispose of your property and some of those fights that can happen when someone passes.
Yeah, and I know these can be a little pricey to do because we had that done and it wasn't cheap, right? But what about someone who says, well, can I just kind of write it out on a piece of paper and put it in a shoebox and sign my name to it? Won't that do it? Because people think, I mean, maybe it used to work that way, but people think that. I've heard this story actually said to me, and I'm not pretty sure that won't hold up in court.
Generally not. Each state has certain requirements that these documents must meet to be able to be recognized as being effective. So it's highly recommended to at least consult with an attorney when you're preparing one to put it together. And just so you know that if you do have a will made from another state, and it was properly made under those states' laws, if you move to another state, those states will generally recognize those documents.
Good to know.
What's the difference between a will and a trust?
A trust is a document that helps you to avoid what's called probate. Mm-hmm. Probate is the court proceedings that will occur once you've passed away to determine the disposition of your property, any debts you have, that sort of process. If you have just a will, you have to what's called probate that will, which means you open up a court case, submit the will to the court, the court will then take a look at it to make sure the will is valid and then be the clearinghouse for any debts, liabilities that you have. You can pay those off, and then they will approve the distribution of your property pursuant to that will.
But a trust enables you to effectively go an end around on that and have it all done ahead of time so that everything is automatically going. It's kind of, in my experience, again, a trust works the way I thought a will would work, right? So I would have this document and everything just kind of goes to the people I want it to go to and it just happens. That's what a trust effectively does by putting it not in their names but in the name of the trust itself, this non-human entity that your loved ones are the executors of, or the, that's not the right word I know, but the executors of it. And so it's a way to, again, also avoid months in court, especially if you have an argument amongst family members about where the money's going to go.
Who wants what and the precious urn that was passed down.
And probate can really slow that way down. And you got, you know, your spouse who's retired and in her 70s and needs her income to pay for her community at Lutheran Senior Services. And suddenly she maybe even can't access it because it's all tied up in court for a couple of months, right? And a trust will help you avoid that.
Correct. A trust you accurately described it, would be to think of it as a third-party entity that you're putting your property and your name into it. The trust has certain rules that this is how the money can be spent, where it's going to go, and then you have what's the trustee, which would be the equivalent of the executor of the will, who then distributes the money and property pursuant to the rules that you've set forward in that trust. A lot of times, spouses will make a trust to benefit their wife, their husband, so if they pass away, they know that their loved one's going to be taken care of. They don't have to deal with the hassle of probate, and that trust will be spent to benefit whoever they've designated.
Now, the documents on the blog are not going to enable you to just kind of have your own trust then again, though, but these are things you could begin looking at, learning about, and then
Correct.
You would want to take them to your own counsel, to a lawyer.
Well, then on behalf of, you know, and for taking that one step further, once you do that, I think it's really beneficial. I'm sure, Brian, you would concur, to have an open dialogue with all your family members so they know, hey, this is what I've said in my advance directive. This is what I want, and I want you all to be aware of that. Or, hey, I've set up a trust. This is what I'm planning on doing. Because that way, I mean, when it comes time, then everyone knows what's going on, and there's no surprises. There's not anything like that. I remember when my grandfather passed away, he did a trust. And so honestly, everything was already, like, the funeral was already paid for. He was so meticulous in making sure he had all those documents ready so that we could, you know, focus on, hey, we know what he wants and we know where everything's going, and we can celebrate his life during that time and not worry about, oh, who's going to sign this paperwork and who's going to take this. I think, Brian, you would say it just alleviates a lot of pressure later down the road.
Of course. I mean, these are tough conversations to have, talking about death and dying, but they're absolutely ones I recommend you have. In addition, you want to keep these documents in a place that people know where they are.
Right.
Because these aren't going to be kept on file with the court. These aren't going to be kept on file with any third party. It's going to be you having them. So it's good so that your family knows where to go look for these documents when they need them. In addition, if I may,
sure.
The advance directive and the healthcare power of attorney are definitely documents you should take with you whenever you go to the hospital.
Huh.
So if you're going to be seeking medical care that's anything outside of a routine doctor's office visit, it's good to take these documents with you, provide them to your healthcare providers so that they know who to call on if they need to invoke those documents. Like, gosh forbid something adverse happens, you can't make decisions. They know who then they can listen to make those decisions for you.
And at the risk of sounding like a salesman for the trust again, you can get a little bit of sticker shock when you look at what it costs to set the thing up, but it also ends up potentially saving you court costs, legal fees,
and
taxes,
hassle,
even taxes,
yeah.
later in life. So it's one of those things that you'll pay a little up front to get a little more for your family later. Right.
So I would encourage everyone who's listening, please go to lssliving.org/blog, get the list for yourself. I mean, we're coming up on the holiday season. This is a great time to have maybe that initial conversation of making sure, hey, does everyone have these documents? Is there something that maybe we need to focus on and make sure that we have for down the road? Because really the holidays, we're all together. And like Brian said, sometimes it can be hard talking about, you know, the end of our life here and preparing for it. But at the same time, it's really necessary. And ultimately, you know, we keep that in mind that, you know, this life is just in preparation for the next.
One of the beautiful things about Christianity is that we can talk about death without all of the fear. Obviously, we still carry fear with us, but we know that this is not the end and that we have a Savior who has overcome death for us, so that these conversations are we can be open and honest and not pretend, oh, no, you're never going to die, Grandma. Well, yeah, you know, we all are, grandchild, and you maybe should go to church and remember that sometime, right? to have that conversation, it could technically be a witness opportunity. Another thing that's a nice thing to do, if you're doing this kind of planning for end of life, and you mentioned what your grandfather did, plan the funeral. Get to talk to your pastor, talk about what you'd like sung, how you'd like it to be set up, and that's something that, as a pastor in the parish, I saw families argue about that. They get in fights over what songs were going to get sung. You can go ahead and take care of that so that when it does happen, really they're getting the message of Christ preached to them, as opposed to everyone kind of trying to figure out who gets to power up at a very emotionally laden time. You had one more document that you wanted to talk about, Brian?
Correct. This is what's called the release of information form. This is generally a document you'll complete anytime you go to seek medical care. It's the document that says, I, Brian Reinhold, give Mercy Healthcare permission to speak to Anne Marie about my health care or my financial decisions. This is a document that you can complete to allow people who are not your health care power of attorney to at least get some information about what's going on with that particular episode of care. So you could say your wife's out of town and your son's taking you. You could then designate your son to be able to at least receive that information, to know what's going on and be able to relay it to the rest of the family.
So this is like when I go in to visit someone in the hospital and I see the doctor and I'm the pastor and I'm like, hey, so what's happening? And they're like, I can't tell you, because privacy is a big deal in the medical community now.
Yes, it is.
And well, pastor, they won't tell you. Son, they won't tell you. No, a wife, they won't. Well, I don't know about spouse. Maybe spouse does get a privilege there.
Generally, they do not, unless it's one of the few rare emergency situations.
So even if you're just trying to ask their doctor, and you know they're just in a regular, it's not an emergency, it's just a regular hospital stay, they're not going to tell you the private information about their health unless you have this form.
Correct, this release of information form.
And that's great.
We at Lutheran Senior Services unfortunately have to deal with this situation a lot, because we have loved ones who want to know information, but our obligation is to our residents and our clients to protect their confidentiality, not only to provide excellent health care, but to protect that. And we're oftentimes finding ourselves in a situation having to educate the family on what the law allows us to do and not to do. And part of that education is letting them know what they can do to be able to get this information. We're not trying to be secretive. We're not trying to hide things. Just trying to protect the residents' rights.
Yeah, well, and it's HIPAA, right? I mean, it's the law. It's the federal laws. It's why you have to sign that HIPAA form every time that you go into the doctor anywhere, so that they can get the information. And so now what you're doing is trying to give that same right you would give to your primary care physician to your family to be able to know what's going on with you. All of this information available at lssliving.org/blog. At least get you started there. This list, some more documents to read about there. Anything else, Anne-Marie, you'd like to share about the blog or want to ask Brian today?
Well, I just want to thank Brian for coming in. Like we stated earlier, he's our in-house counsel and really does a great job about advising us, you know, with all those HIPAA laws and things like that. So, Brian, thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate it, especially, I know it's rather early.
Thank you for having me.
You know, it's been fascinating, really. And people can't learn enough about how to protect their loved ones, protect their family. It isn't 150 years ago where you could just kind of pass on and let everything happen. There's a lot going on today in the legal sphere. So having that counsel available at LSS, at Lutheran Senior Services in general is fantastic, but also you out there, it's good to take care of the future for the sake of your loved ones. Anne-Marie and Emery Wallace and Brian Reinhold of Lutheran Senior Services in studio with us today on His Time. We'll be back with the lectionary study at the top of the hour. See you in a moment.